Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Tigard residents are at odds with the city over a beaver dam. A study finds that Seattle drivers are among the worst in the nation. And a cop, police horse, drops dead in front of horrified beachgoers.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, September 1st, 2011. People in one Tigard neighborhood are fighting the city to keep a beaver dam in place. The dam is on Summer Creek near Southwest 121st and Mearstone Court. The city removed it once, but the beavers returned and rebuilt it. Craig Brown's parents live right down on the creek, and they say when they bought their house, it was like waterfront property. Now the water has receded. Craig Brown said they bought it because it was waterfront property. Now they're concerned the value has dropped immensely. The city of Tigard decided to remove the dam because of concerns about debris getting into a nearby culvert. Assistant Public Works Director Brian Reger said, "It got to the point where we made a call. It did not look like the beavers would repair it. And we didn't want debris to plug up the culverts."
Beavers never repair anything. They're like Albanians.
Rager said the city still believes the dam needs to be moved once again, but this time they'll work with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to develop a plan for the move. He also said the city would work more closely with the neighbors to let them know what's going on. It's likely nothing will happen with the Beavers Dam until spring.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can get this program later on today via iTunes if you like. Also as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. And you can take it with you on your mobile device if you like at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile or mobile.cascadia.fm.
In other Tigard news, a late-night water main break sent nearly 3 million gallons of water into the streets and flooded a half-dozen homes in Tigard. It is unsure if this was related to the beavers in any way. Crews with Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue were called to the area of Southwest Hall Boulevard near 91st Avenue around midnight. Investigators calculated about 2.9 million gallons of water streamed along the road and into neighboring homes and apartments for about 2.5 hours. At least 5 homes suffered water damage and nearby apartment complexes lost water service. Oregon Department of Transportation and Tualatin Valley Fire District workers teamed up to search for the exact location of the breach, beavers, and examined the roadway to ensure that it was safe.
This is water, right? We're sure it's not sea foam?
No, this apparently was not sea foam or river foam, as we would have here in Portland. But no, this was water. They discovered a 1.4 section of the bottom of the 12-inch cast iron water main had ruptured. I think it was the beavers. They're angry. Crews managed to restore water service to the area later in the morning.
Okay.
A police horse dropped dead in front of horrified beachgoers and joggers in Chicago while being ridden by a cop. Officer Paul Casasanto was on mounted patrol at North Avenue Beach around 2 p.m. yesterday when the horse, named Mikey C., began to struggle and went down. Officer Casasanto was grief-stricken by the death of his horse, an 18-year-old chestnut thoroughbred, who he said was like family. He told the Chicago Tribune, "When you spend $8 a day, 5 days a week together, he was like my family. They bring you nothing but joy."
Now, I'm not trying to mock the death of an animal or a police horse, but it is, as you know, one of the long-standing traditions here at Legion of News and the Rick Emerson Show that we like anything that happens in front of horrified onlookers.
Right.
Anything that, especially if there's a parade of children coming through, perhaps a sightseeing tour. Maybe there's a large gaggle of folks from out of town on one of those double-decker buses, and they're just, and they're coming to see the big city, mm-hmm. and then...
Then something horrible happens in front of them.
You know, but in my mind's eye, the picture is actually pretty great that accompanies this article because there's just the feet sticking out from underneath but I was sort of picturing initially like a big horse chalk outline, which would have been even better.
Yeah, but no. Instead, they had to kind of jerry-rig a body bag out of a tarp. So there's a picture, actually, I have put that in the Dropbox, of the horse covered in a tarp.
I'm just saying, everything dies eventually. If something, when I die, I hope that it's in front of horrified onlookers. I hope that it's in a way that can unnerve the greatest number of people.
Well, Officer Castellano did say he tried to calm his horse as passersby in bathing suits and jogging clothes came close. He told people to stand back as the horse continued to kick its powerful legs out. The Chicago Tribune reported that a little blonde boy tugged on his mother's beach bag and said, "Mommy, what's wrong with the horse?"
Sorry. Okay, here's what's great about that quote. It's made up.
Oh, yeah. No, that didn't happen.
That's a fake quote in my constitutionally protected opinion. That sounds like a thing that's made up. That sounds...
Blonde boy tugging at his mother's beach bag.
That didn't really happen.
No, that never happened.
That's a thing you can put into the story because no one is going to challenge you on it. Everybody will just go, "Wow, that really says it all right there."
Really?
That's the humanity right there on display.
In the newsroom, though, somebody is looking across the room at Jim, who wrote the story, and going, "Seriously? Mommy, what's wrong? Really?" You're going, "Hey, pathos!"
A little blonde. Well, you know what? Because then the reporter can just knock off early and go home and drink.
Yeah.
That's what that's all about.
The horse appeared to have had a seizure, but police department spokesman Daryl Beatty said the cause of death hasn't yet been determined.
All right, then. You are listening to Legion of News here at... Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program is going to be coming up at rickemersonshow.com. That is next hour at rickemersonshow.com, featuring a taser watch and more hilarity than you can shake a stick factory at. That's coming up next hour. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm.
We've known for a long time the day would come when white people would no longer be a majority in America.
Don't ever say that.
I'm sorry.
Not even joking.
It's almost here. That time is almost here. It is nigh. Rick Emerson. 22 of the country's 100 largest metropolitan areas, including New York City and Washington, D.C., are now, quote, majority minority, meaning ethnic minorities account for more than half of their population.
Are they also jumbo shrimp?
Oh, military intelligence.
Zam.
Am I right? This, according to a report released Wednesday by the Brookings Institution, the number has grown from 14 in the 2000 census and just 5 in 1990. In all, the percentage of non-Hispanic whites in the nation's large metro areas has dropped from 71% in 1990 to 57% in 2010.
Why do they make that distinction?
Non-Hispanic whites?
Yeah, why?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not disputing the existence of... non-Hispanic whites. I'm just saying, why are stories always... you were a journalist. Why are stories always phrased that way?
I don't understand that particular phrase myself.
Well, Martin Sheen is a... he is Hispanic. No,
yeah.
Wait, he's
no,
not.
He's from, Hispanic.
No, he's not. He's from Spain. He's Spanish. There's a difference.
I thought he was Mexican.
No, he's from Spain.
Oh, okay.
I do believe... I think he may have been born in Mexico City, but I believe his parents were there from Spain. Oh. I believe he is Spanish, not unlike Cortez, the conqueror.
But I mean, with other ethnicities, we don't actually just classify them by the darkness of their skin.
Non-Baker's chocolate African-Americans.
Non-dark as midnight black people. non-super yellow Asians. I mean, why non-white Hispanics?
Non-jaundiced Asians.
Yes, I mean, it's just non-drunk Irishmen.
There's got to be some reason, because the only conclusion I can come to is that if you weren't to make that distinction, it screws up the results they're trying to tell you.
Yeah, maybe.
That it undercuts somehow what they believe to be the point of the survey.
Well, Asians and Hispanics were the fastest growing groups nationwide, each increased by about 43% in the past decade. Asians are heavily concentrated in three major cities, Los Angeles, New York, and San Francisco, while Hispanic population growth has been more widespread. The black population increased by a more modest 12% overall, rising mainly in southern cities like Atlanta, Dallas, and Houston. The nation's aging white population grew by just 1.2%, though whites remain a large majority in most smaller cities and rural areas. So what happened is pivotal, said William Frey, one of the Brookings demographers. He said, large metropolitan areas will be the laboratories for change. The measures they take to help minorities assimilate and become part of the labor force will be studied by other parts of the country that are whiter and haven't been touched by much of the change.
So ironically, our friend Keelan weighs in and says, yeah. This is about the non-Hispanic white thing. He says this is because people of Hispanic descent, pardon me, a little visa there, says people of Hispanic descent can put down white on applications.
Can they?
Well, I could put down Asian on applications.
Well, yeah. I used to put down on like college stuff. I would say that I was Native American.
Well, you are. Born here.
Also, my father always linguistically claimed he was part Native American. But I just thought, I don't know, maybe at some point that would help me in some fashion.
Is this because
if
you're...
It never did, by the way.
Is it? Well, here's the thing. If you can put down... Look, I don't want to shatter anybody's sense of cultural identity. If you can put down white and have people believe you, guess what? You're white. Well, I don't want to ruin your day. But if you tell somebody, yeah, I'm white, and they go, yeah, you are. You're a white man. So I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news to all of my swarthy brethren, but if it walks like a white man, and you know, I'm just saying.
Et cetera.
I just don't understand.
What if you're Wayne Brady, and you look like a black man, but you talk and act in all other ways like a white man?
That's having Gumbel's disease.
Ah,
I don't know. That's we're trying to find a cure for that.
Yes. Federal authorities have asked for more time to try and restore accused Tucson shooter Jared Lee Loeffner's mental competency, saying he's currently unable to stand trial. An order by federal judge Larry Burns on Tuesday said he will consider the government's request, citing a doctor's new report on Loeffner's current mental health. Legal analyst... Legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin says forcibly medicating Loeffner is within the law.
The way these cases usually end is the judges, the lawyers say, look, we're going to just defer to the doctors in prison. Let them do what they want. We're not going to tell the doctors how to do their job. And they want to medicate him, so chances are he'll still be medicated.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to hella medicate him.
I mean, come on. If you can jab a needle in Billy Idol's neck to get him out on stage to do a set, why not Jared Loeffner so he can testify?
Or so he can stop shooting people.
I mean, seriously.
Medicate that guy with a gun.
Toobin says medicating Loeffner probably makes no difference in the end.
How this plays out down the line, I'm not sure. But the one thing that is certain is he's never getting out of custody, whether it's a mental hospital or a prison.
That's not happening.
Perhaps an execution, but he's not going anywhere.
No.
Oh, God, that was great.
He does have a wry sense of humor that...
he's not seeing the light of day for a long time.
It's fantastic.
Oh, Toobin says Loeffner's defense wants the court-approved medication to stop.
I mean, they're basically saying you're fattening him up for the slaughter because there is no doubt here that he did the shooting. So their only defense is some sort of mental capacity, insanity defense.
And even that is just, I mean, you can say, at a certain point, it seems like saying he's crazy, like you've gone past the point of, it's like going into the end zone and then continuing to drive into the stands over spectators. At a certain point, you've proven that he's crazy. Now, unfortunately, you've proven you've overproved the point. And now they're going to keep him in a small room, like forever, jabbing him with things.
The manager of a fitness store in Northeast Portland is upset after a vehicle slammed into his building for the third time in less than a year.
Is it the same vehicle?
That sentence would lead one to believe, yes, but I have a feeling it's...
Is this from KGW?
Yeah, probably. Right. Either them or KPTV. Really, a vehicle slammed into his building for the third time in less than a year. The most recent came early Wednesday morning. Jeff Hahn, sales director at Northwest Fitness, said, nobody likes a 3 o'clock wake-up call. Hahn has received a few of these calls since October 2010. He said since then, three cars have slammed into his building. Ah, different cars. Several others have ended up in his parking lot with busted tires and oil pans.
Busted.
Hahn said, usually they hit the island here and into the building, into the bio swale there.
I'm sorry.
I don't know what a bio swale is.
It's a word that doesn't exist, Don. Seems like you should have known that. It's a made up piece of gibberish.
I give it 5 seconds before Thomas Gill is explaining what a bio swale is.
A bio swale.
Or continue straight on through. Hahn said the city's new Burnside Cooch couplet is the reason for the chaos. He said drivers do not know when the two-way streets turn into a one-way. It's turned into a lot of bottlenecking, traffic issues, and accidents, he said. Dan Anderson of the Portland Bureau of Transportation said, we're looking at it, seeing what we can do.
Please dispel bioswale.
B-I-O-S-W-A-L-E.
Well, I was going to put that in my onboard dictionary here, but that's probably not going to show up. Are you looking that up?
No. I'm saving a photo for another story.
Okay.
I'm multitasking over here.
All right. Bioswale.
Bioswale.
Oh, sure enough, it's in Wikipedia.
Well, yeah.
It offered to auto-complete it. It's a landscape element, Don, designed to remove silt and pollution from the surface of runoff water.
Okay, then. It's interesting that
it's a ditch,
that the guy
basically.
Who works at the gym knows what this word means and to use it, and we don't know.
Yeah.
We've never heard of it.
No, it's...
So good for you, Jeff Hahn.
Okay, but listen to this. It's all worth it for this word. A bioswale is a landscape element designed to remove silt and pollution from the surface of runoff water. They consist of a... swaled, which I believe is...
Is that something when something is extra swollen, like hella swollen?
Yeah,
it's all swaled up.
Couldn't get out of the house. His leg was completely swaled. I believe that swaled means to be... it's angled downward. It's sort of like a drainage culvert. But anyway, consists of a swaled drainage course with gently sloped sides filled with vegetation, compost, and or... riprap.
See, now there's another word I don't... Swale is a low tract of land, especially one that is moist or marshy.
Riprap.
See, and then now we have riprap. I've never heard of riprap.
Riprap, also known as... I swear to God it says this. This is Wikipedia now, and it's a formalized article. You can tell somebody put time in this. Riprap, also known as... riprap.
Well, two words as opposed to one word.
Or rubble.
Ah, rubble. That I've heard of.
Yeah, it's rock. It's like rock that you're using as a filtration, like when you use charcoal.
All right. Okay.
All right. There you go. We've now concludes this segment of On to Better Word Power with Rick Emerson.
What right. words mean? So Dan Anderson with the Portland Bureau of Transportation, he says he seems to feel that it's foolish and stupid that people keep crashing into things. He says, there are markings on the ground, markings in the air, signs on the street, which I think was a Phil Collins song. Drivers should be aware of the street is turning when they come up on the intersection. So he seems to think everybody should just know, and yet people keep crashing into things and running off the road. So apparently it's not, I would say it's not nearly as clear as Mr. Anderson of the Portland Bureau of Transportation seems to think it is.
No, although like once a week, you know, I'll pass somebody, usually from out of town, to be fair, who's going the wrong way down a one-way street. And we're all busy honking and waving at him and go, you're going the wrong way! Oh! You know,
well,
and then
yeah.
he just...
Every other day I have to honk at somebody when I'm going to get on the Ross Island Bridge because they're looking ahead at the signs and not at the way the lanes are marked.
Yeah.
And so they don't, like, veer gently to the right. They just keep going straight ahead into my lane. Literally every other day,
no,
I have to honk at somebody and go, that's not your lane!
Poorly designed.
So that's Portland for you. It's a city that works.
Sort of.
That's our motto.
They didn't say it works well.
No, it just, it works. It's good enough. That's our city motto.
You know, what are you going to do?
We fix stuff when it's hot.
Yeah.
Yeah. A 6-foot boa constrictor was discovered in a northeast Albuquerque neighborhood on Thursday. Brad King says he was driving through the neighborhood when he noticed the snake peeking out from underneath a car.
It was peeking out.
King said...
It was skulking.
King said, the first thing I thought is, that is a big snake.
Okay.
The animal, which was determined to be a 5-year-old female boa, is now making its home at the Eastside Animal Shelter and has been named Skatha, after the Greek goddess of the underworld.
Was it necessary to include his quote that the first thing he thought was, "That's a big snake"?
Yes, that was it. That this is see the again my
state
background
of journalism.
My background in journalism, I can tell you. You have to get quotes,
but
and often the quotes you get are really stupid.
He must have said something else.
And you come back and you look at your notes and you just go, "I got nothing."
That can't have been the only thing he said. Maybe it was the most interesting thing he said.
It is quite literally the only quote from this guy in the story.
Okay,
that is what they. That was the best they had. No one has come forward to claim the snake, so we may never know where she came from or how long she's been out there skulking around under cars.
She came from a mommy and daddy snake that loved each other very much.
Since these types of snakes are not regular visitors to the animal shelter, employees said they don't have her preferred meal of rodents readily available and are anxious to get her adopted out. Several people, including King, have shown interest in adopting the snake. Animal Control says because this type of pet does not require an exotic pet license, the owner would not be facing any citations. Apparently, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a boa constrictor is not considered an exotic pet.
And yet you can't have a hedgehog. Go figure.
Oh, damn bastards.
It is 12:20. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at Cascadia, or at legionofnews.com. You can also get the program on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. The Rick Emerson Show coming up next hour, featuring a taser watch. That is at rickemersonshow.com, where you can be amused for the low cost of just 32 cents a day.
Plus, it's Thursday. And
yes,
Thursdays
it is.
Are traditionally...
It's
kind of wacky.
It's pizza day.
Yes. We wear no pants on Thursday, so which makes the comedy even better.
Pantless pizza. Okay.
President Obama is promising the country won't balance the budget on the backs of the country's veterans. During a speech to the American Legion Convention in Minneapolis, the president said he hopes the jobs plan he unveils next week will benefit the entire country, including veterans.
Our economy has to grow faster. We have to create more jobs, and we have to do it faster. And most of all, we've got to break the gridlock in Washington that's been preventing us from taking the action we need to get this country moving.
What is the American Legion? I mean, I've heard that phrase for like 30-whatever years. I don't know what it is.
I don't know, other than a veterans organization. I know that they have...
Is it for all veterans?
They have, I believe, yes. Yes, if you are a veteran of any war, any foreign war, or I guess
do they compete with the veterans of foreign wars?
Possibly.
Do they rumble?
Volleyball gates. They normally what they have is they have meeting halls that have bars in them, and you can go to them at any time of the day or night and see very tired, bitter men sitting around drinking.
Now, see again, that's I would assume that's the VFW.
VFW is maybe I'm conflating the
VFW is the no that's American there's Legion. Drinking just day and night going on
oh,
there.
Oh yeah, okay.
Squat
yeah,
no, brick I, buildings.
You're right. I'm thinking of the VFW.
Yeah, you can drink cheaply there though.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about it. It's to go with my mom and her her boozy veteran friends.
Yeah, seriously. And it's like if you want to you know and so we have a friend of ours named Trevor, and Trevor was in the military, and he will sometimes in his more irascible moods will just say, you know, he will point out that, you know, but you know, the one thing this country does, they let me drink cheaply. God bless him.
Oh, updating on a previous story, by the way, listener Roger clarifies that bioswale is Portland speak for a ditch.
That I said ditch, by the way.
There you go.
So. Rick Emerson said ditch.
President Obama said the government itself can only do so much.
We're encouraging the private sector to do its part.
Yeah.
So I've challenged companies
works.
Across America to hire or train 100,000 unemployed veterans or their spouses.
Okay.
All right, then.
So there's that. So we don't know what the American Legion is. It's not like the it's not like the French Foreign Legion.
Well, no, because
it's American.
American.
Yeah, but I mean, but even so. All right. Well, okay.
Yeah, the American Legion is a veterans organization. It is a mutual aid organization for veterans of the United States Armed Forces to benefit them in some fashion.
Don't we already have a veterans association? It's called the Veterans Association.
Right. Well, this is another one.
Okay.
That was drafted by Congress.
Maybe it's like the Elks to the VA Shriners.
They're kind of a lobbying organization, I think, sort of like the NRA, where they, you know, ostensibly, you know, have meetings and have members and all that sort of thing. But really, they're kind of like a political action group in a lot of ways.
Someone says, I went to a VFW a couple years ago. They had Jane Fonda targets in the urinal. Good times.
I just remember all these, going with my mom to the VFW, all these old guys, and the guys who had been in Vietnam had to sit, like, separate because the guys who had been in World War II didn't like them because they didn't seem to consider them, like, you know, real soldiers. They hadn't been in, like, a real war like they had.
Okay.
So, and you think, you know, they're all pulling together. No, not really so much. Like, did you fight Jerry? Well, screw you then. You were just in a jungle smoking dope, you hippie.
I hate people.
Yeah. Are your eyes all right? You've been kind of blinky and.
I've got something in my right eye. I've got an eyelash or something that is caught in my right eye.
Don't you wish I had that eyewash cup right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, I suppose. Except I'd have to wash it out with Viso or spit.
Yeah.
So I've got something in my right eye, but then it's that thing where as you've got something in your eye, then the other eye at a certain point you get this like weird sympathy twitch where it's like, but the other's like, well, I guess I'll start to hurt too. And so now both eyes have just got this, this sort of weird, it's like an ear. It's that feeling of like
you're getting tiny little red Templeton rat eyes.
It's like I've got it's like the thing of like you got a little piece of sand or something. It's not sand, but it's that like a piece of grit.
Maybe it's a spider.
Possibly.
Maybe a spider laid eggs in your eye while you were sleeping.
Could be like that time that I was putting in my contact lenses and I got a hair underneath it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I had long hair, so then I went and flipped my hair back and I ripped a hair across the surface of my eye.
Yeah.
See? That's what you get for talking about spiders.
Yeah.
In your face.
All right. You know that apparently every year, each person swallows an average of 3 spiders while they sleep.
That's made up.
I just heard that the other day.
Yeah. Okay. You heard somebody make it up.
You just wish that was made up because you don't want to think about it when you go to sleep.
Yeah.
A new report reveals which cities have the worst drivers in America, and Western Washington drivers ranked among the worst.
Hooray!
America's Best Drivers Report by Allstate ranked drivers in U.S. cities from 1 to 193, one being the best and 193 the worst. 3 cities in Western Washington came in toward the bottom. Seattle sits at 147.
Ha!
Bellevue at 145.
I can believe that.
And Tacoma at 141.
Yeah, and see what they've got. Bellevue really is a bad place to drive. I was in Bellevue last year. Bellevue is a terrible because it's just, and Bellevue is just this, it is just this tiny little constricted city of just, you know what it is? It's like those Hot Wheels tracks you get when you're a kid where they do figure eights and they loop around, and but occasionally the loops will intersect so that every 100 laps the cars smash into each other. That's what Bellevue is designed like.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, according to the report, an average driver in those cities, Seattle, Bellevue, and Tacoma, will experience an auto accident every 8 years.
Oh, I believe it.
The study is based on the frequency of auto accidents, which can result in property claim damage. Seattle, Bellevue, and Tacoma drink low on the list. The worst drivers are in Washington, D.C., where the average driver will get into an accident every 4 to 5 years.
Wow. That really surprised me, because Washington, D.C., it's a small place. It's not, I mean, I guess it's small, but they really go out of their way to hit each other.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And also, if you want to try to avoid being in a traffic accident, if you're a very good driver, apparently the best place for you to be, you should move to Fort Collins, Colorado.
Or an ice floe.
Yes. A Marine wounded in the war in Iraq, and now with a Purple Heart, Bronze Star, and Texas House resolution honoring his service, can't get his U.S. citizenship. Manuel Espinoza, who lives in South Texas, says the U.S. State Department has denied his applications.
They said that I have improper documentation, that I have to resubmit everything else again, and I haven't applied ever since. I just got frustrated again.
Espinoza lives in South Texas and says he was willing to serve partly in hopes of getting help obtaining citizenship.
When you first join and everything, they say that...
Wait, so we actually let a guy join the military who wasn't a citizen?
Yes.
That's ironic of us.
Yeah.
We do have a sense of humor in this country, don't we?
When you first join and everything, they say that if you're not a citizen, after you complete your first 4 years or whatever, that the military helps you out trying to get your citizenship.
Okay, well, there's your first problem is believing your recruiter when he told you something.
You believed the army.
No, we'll figure this all out later. Espawanto, whatever your name is, sign right here.
And you also get 3 women and a giant sack of money.
Should be great. We'll pay for all your college everywhere.
Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead and
you'll
right
get
there.
You'll get health care for the rest of your life and live on Easy Street.
It's okay if you just need to X or something there if you can't spell your name. That's fine. That's great.
You're not a homo, are you? Well, wait a minute. Don't tell me. That's all right.
So he got the Bronze Star, and then just for grins, I guess we're still going to tell him, like, and you don't get to live here.
Yeah.
By now.
Pretty much.
Yeah. All right.
Like, thanks for taking the bullets.
Thanks for the service, stupid.
Let's do our science.
All right. Here's your science on the march, brought to you by, I wish I'd never seen that video. You know what I'm talking about? The honey badger thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know.
I just find myself falling into that thanks for the whatever stupid thing, like, all the time. Damn you. Thanks for the catchphrase, stupid.
Honey badger, all right. Don't care.
I gotta close this. What?
Honey badger, don't care.
No. All right. And, yeah, there we go. It's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. They bring you this segment, beloved by people the world over. You can find them at 503, not the people, but Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609, or you can go to squireselectric.com, or you can go to facebook.com/squireselectric. While you're there, hit the like button, if you would. That is squireselectric.com. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. You can find them there and have them come out to your home or business and fix what needs fixing, upgrade what needs upgrading, inspect what needs inspecting, do what needs doing. That's SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, everything from a single socket to the whole building, it can make your life easier. They are the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
Celiac disease, a condition resulting from an immune reaction to gluten, continues to increase in the United States, according to scientists. Even considering an increased awareness of the condition and more accurate diagnostic methods, doctors are still encountering more people with gluten intolerance. Recent work showed an increase in celiac disease among participants in a longitudinal study. The results showed that the prevalence of the disease is 5 times greater now than it was in 1974 when the data was first collected. Also, the findings suggest that people can develop the disease later in life. Another analysis using 50-year-old preserved blood samples from a U.S. database showed that the antibodies associated with celiac disease weren't as common in the 1950s when compared to recent decades. This was researched at the Mayo Clinic. When compared when they compared the samples from the 1950s to recent ones from donors of the same age, researchers found people to be more than 4 times as likely to have celiac disease. In these patients, the immune system launches an attack on the small intestine, targeting areas of the organ's lining called villi, which are known to help the body absorb nutrients from food. If left undiagnosed, a person could continue eating gluten in breads, processed foods, and some dairy products and become increasingly malnourished. Even more, those areas that can become permanently damaged and unable to absorb nutrients well after a person stops consuming gluten. In some cases, celiac can be deadly if left unnoticed, but the vast majority of cases are manageable. Although people's experiences vary, most individuals with this type of gluten intolerance have abdominal pain, digestive issues, and even feel constantly fatigued from being malnourished. The disease can also affect people's mental health, especially if their body lacks certain vitamins and nutrients. Researchers know that genetics play a role in a person's chance of developing celiac disease, which might be why the condition is relatively common in Europe as well. But they're still floating theories as to why it's on the increase.
I think I speak for everybody when I say I don't want my immune system to be attacking my colon or intestine.
No. No one wants that.
I need those things.
That would be a bad thing. One theory is that as our diets and environments become less diverse, so does the variety of gut bacteria in our intestines. So as a result, our intestines may be more vulnerable to conditions such as celiac disease. My quibble with celiac disease...
Is it sounds like Sleestack disease?
Yes, there's okay. That. Also, it's another one of those things that even people that don't know for sure they have it, they self-diagnose because yeah. It's something that they can whine about and go, I can't eat gluten. You know, oh, shut up. And the other thing is people who actually have it call themselves celiacs. They don't say, I have celiac disease. They call themselves celiacs.
Really?
Which makes no sense. And it irritates the hell out of me.
No, that doesn't work on any level at all.
No, you don't have people with Crohn's disease don't walk around going, I'm a crone. Us crones have to go poop a lot. No, but the gluten intolerant people call themselves celiacs.
Here's the thing about the internet. The internet allows people to be diagnosed by themselves with any disease at any time. Usually at 3 a.m, you know, when they have like, I don't know, when they have like an unexplained like toothache or like a tingle in one of their toes they can't quite figure out the cause of.
I better go to WebMD and find out what's wrong with me. Oh, God, I have cancer.
Apparently I've got bubonic plague. Well, okay, you know, can't go to work.
A new avenue for research on chemicals to control the massive poisonous cane toads that are spreading across Australia has come from the tadpoles of the species. Chemical cues that the tadpoles release into the water can suppress the development of cane toad embryos still in eggs such that they hatch into punier tadpoles that don't survive or grow well. The toads, introduced in a regrettable attempt to control another pest, are disrupting the native ecosystems.
I love things that happen in regrettable attempts to do something else. That is really one of my favorite news developments.
We've got all these bugs. What can we do? Hey, let's introduce these toads that will eat the bugs. Oh, crap. Now we have poisonous toads.
This is exactly... I mean, we really are just a giant... We are a giant... We are not just the house that Jack built. We are Jack himself. This is, I was saying the other day, our bizarre, mutually exclusive approach to the Prime Directive, you know? I think we should just take a vote. We should either try to fix stuff or we shouldn't try to fix stuff. Because they both seem to have their downside.
Well, the reason that Louisiana is overrun by nutria is because of McElhenney, the guy who invented Tabasco. Because he imported some nutria and he started a breeding thing and he started a mail order program. It was actually very big at a certain point around the turn of the last century that there were newspaper and magazine ads that encouraging people to buy a pair of nutria and breed them like minks.
For and what?
Sell them for their fur.
Really?
For nutria fur coats.
I didn't know they had fur.
Yeah, no, they're big. They're like beavers.
I've only ever seen them run across the sidewalk like by OMSI while I'm biking.
They're like giant, evil beavers with long rat tails that are constantly wet and scary looking with super long Cheeto-colored teeth.
Okay.
They're horrifying. But yeah, no, they have beaver-like pelts. And the thing is, it never caught on, the whole nutria fur thing. But the McElhenney guy on his plantation in Louisiana, he had all these nutria. And then there was a hurricane, and it cracked open all of the nutria cages, and they scurried out into the swamps and just started breeding like crazy. And now Louisiana is just lousy with nutria to the point that, you know, they're considered a horrible pest, and they're, like, almost impossible to eradicate.
And now they're here.
Yeah, and we have them here. And they're horribly destructive to, like, riverbanks and waterways because they just eat all of the root systems along the waterways, and all of the ground just collapses into the water.
Okay, here's what we need to do. Again, I suggest this all the time, and everybody says, well, Rick, that's fine for amusement purposes, but we don't really see any practical application for this. You just say, tell the guys at the metal scrapyard, we need you to start paying for nutria. And then the word trickles out among the meth heads, like, look, hey, they're paying for nutria at this place down the way, but you only do that in certain counties.
Yeah.
You just say, like, if you live, like, below the Mason-Dixon line, you can bring in nutria, we'll give you double whatever we'd give you for scrap. Go. But then you give a penalty, like, don't be bringing us, like, if you bring us, like, somebody's cat, then not only do you not get paid, but then we take whatever meth you have on you. So that as a control mechanism.
They tried in Louisiana to get people eating nutria. They started...
No.
Well, apparently...
It's not going to happen.
Apparently the flesh is actually quite tasty. They're vegetarians. They eat nothing but grasses. Their flesh is actually... Like beavers, their flesh is actually apparently very mild and not untasty. But the thing is, it's like, you know...
That's telling me that Martha Ray's really good in bed. It's not going to help.
But they had like a nutria festival where they had all of these chefs come and cook nutria.
No,
and they
tried
to get people... Like with here, what did we have here? We had not anchovies. One of those horrible smelt, I think it was. One of those horrible tasting salty fish here in Portland, here in Oregon. And we had so many of them that the fisheries department was trying to get restaurants to put them on the menus. Sardines, that was it. Sardines.
Don't knock sardines.
There were just like that. But I mean, apparently we had just...
Too many?
Yeah, way too many sardines. And so a lot of chefs in Portland and elsewhere tried to put sardines on the menu. And I guess, you know, they're not terrible. But
they're a niche food.
But people just didn't really want to eat them.
I'm telling you, though, harness the power of meth to work for us.
That's right.
Because that solves a couple problems. I mean, A, they're not going to be pulling apart scrap yards and the, you know, electrical substations. B, get rid of the nutria. Mm-hmm. C, I, Rick Emerson, get to be hailed as the creator of brilliant ideas that I am.
So. Also, and it could be just a thing of just bring in the pelt and you get paid. And so, therefore, you can keep the meat and make yourself a nice nutria stew.
Just stir it into your dinty moor.
Yeah. Florida researchers are developing a two-way communication system with a wild spotted dolphin pod in the Atlantic. For 27 years, marine biologist Denise Hertzing and her colleagues have been regular visitors in the Atlantic Ocean home of a 200-member pod of spotted dolphins living north of the Bahama Islands. Understanding the relationships between the members of the pod is key to unraveling what their dozens of whistles, clicks, and other signals mean. Hertzing said the large goal of this project is to tell the story of what it's like to be a dolphin. But being curious and intelligent, as they are, and in many cases probably smarter than us, the dolphins weren't content to just let the scientists take their underwater videos and record their sounds. Dolphins have sophisticated brains. They also have a complex social structure as they form alliances and shared duties. When trained, they have the ability to pick up language. Hertzing said, There are times that they play these games with us in the water. This particular group seems to be curious about us, probably because we're in the water analyzing them. That got her thinking about creating a rudimentary communication system so the dolphins could ask for a particular toy. Two-way communication with dolphins has been attempted various times over the year, but never with a group of animals in the wild. The research has implications in the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, they say, with the dolphins standing in as sort of an ET analog. Hersing said, the idea is, how do you recognize intelligence? That's why people test dolphins and primates in captivity to try and measure their cognitive skills, their abilities, how they use their mind. If you ever got to some place with a non-technological but potentially intelligent species, how would you recognize it and how might you establish some communicative repertoire? There are a lot of species on this planet we could probably learn from as models.
I don't know. They keep talking this gibberish about hogons or zogons or something. A bypass.
And then pointing that laser at us.
I just don't understand.
I don't. And then there's the anal probing. What's that about?
You're not asking me.
No.
Okay.
With the East Coast just drying...
I could tell you. I mean...
Oh, really?
Yeah. Anyway. Later.
Okay. With the East Coast just drying out from Hurricane Irene, experts are now somewhat concerned about satellite images of the next big cloud mass forming on the high seas. Hurricane Ketcha. Upgraded from a tropical storm overnight.
Is that where you have to enter in a series of words to make it stop?
No, that would be Hurricane Captcha.
What did you say?
Catcha.
Okay, but you see how I did the...
Yeah, I did.
All right.
It hovered about 1,700 miles southeast of Bermuda on Thursday morning. With winds topping out at about 75 miles per hour, it's a Category 1 hurricane for now, although experts believe it could eventually reach Category 3. A hurricane specialist told USA Today that it's too early to say whether it will strike the U.S., a stressed-looking Brian Williams reported on NBC Nightly News, forecasters say it's way too early for us to stress over it, he said, stressfully. The new hurricane would have been called Katrina, the next name up in the roster of storm monikers that get recycled every 6 years, but they kind of retired that one after 2005.
That one's hanging in the rafters.
Meanwhile, a separate storm cluster in the Gulf of Mexico this morning...
What if they just used it again and just, like... You know, just told everybody, it's coming back! You know, it's just sort of...
She's coming back around!
It's like Jaws 4, you know, it's just... It somehow tracked us down in a wholly separate part of the country.
A separate storm cluster in the Gulf of Mexico this morning stood a 70% chance of developing into a tropical cyclone for 2 days. That prompted BP to start evacuating some workers from oil and gas platforms.
BP really cares about workers and platforms and the environment.
And should that... cyclone turn into a hurricane and get scary enough to get a name, it's going to be called Lee.
How does a cyclone turn into... I thought a cyclone would turn into a tornado.
Yeah, but they were saying it's a cyclone at sea. So that is... it's smaller than a hurricane, but it's still a whirly thing.
It's a whirly thing.
Yeah.
Smaller than a hurricane! I wish I was dead.
That's all the science.
All right, there's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. 503-252-1609 is their phone number, or you can go to facebook.com/Squires Electric. And while you're there, click the like button if you would. You can also go to squireselectric.com. They are the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March. Don't forget, coming up next hour at rickemersonshow.com, the Rick Emerson radio program today featuring the Taser Watch. We'll have your entertainment news here in just a few, and so forth. If you're... I don't know, listening to this live and you're somehow not armed with a watch and we're your only source of news and information, well, A, you are poorer for that in every conceivable way. Also, it's 1242. Or if you're Dawn and you don't have a watch.
No, but I have a computer and it says right there. I'm pointing at it right now. It says 1242.
What, is your computer clock accurate?
It says 1242.
All right, then. Excellent. So. I'm not going to offer you my help anymore.
Thank you. JCPenney announced yesterday it has stopped selling a girl's T-shirt with the tag... Did you hear about this T-shirt thing?
No. Is it one of those shirts that just says horror on the front? Or?
It's okay. This is one of those things I got to say it's kind of awesome. This is one of those cases where somebody sees something on the internet and says, oh my God, this is so incredibly butt stupid, and is outraged about it. Then someone else is outraged about it, and then they tell two friends, and they tell 20 friends, and then everyone on the internet is outraged about
it. Is it a thing they don't actually really sell in the store?
No, it really is. But then JCPenney has to go, oh, yeah, okay, maybe that was a bad idea. I guess maybe we won't sell that now.
Okay.
Part of their sort of back-to-school stuff for girls is a T-shirt that says, and we have a picture of it that you can download. It says, I'm too pretty to do homework, so my brother has to do it for me.
That doesn't even make sense.
No, it really doesn't, but it's also...
If you're too pretty to do homework, why would you need anyone to do it for you?
Right, and it's also sexist and stupid.
Well, I care less about that. I'm just saying the internal logic of that sentence doesn't really hold up. If you're too pretty to do homework, it seems like then the homework doesn't need to be done by anybody. It's not just a question of who's going to do it. It's a question of it doesn't need to be done, period, because, you know, you're feminine wiles and so forth. You know, the sentence structure here is all over the place.
But on the other hand, though, the implication being, of course...
Yes,
you know,
I understand. Yes, men and the patriarchy and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
So JCPenney, an online petition gathered more than 1,600 signatures. And, of course, people were yapping about it on the internet. So JCPenney said, okay, we'll pull the shirt. We're not going to sell the shirt. They issued a statement saying, we agree that the T-shirt does not deliver an appropriate message, and we've immediately discontinued sale. Our merchandise is intended to appeal to a broad customer base, not to offend them. We would like to apologize for any concern we may have caused and assure you that we are taking action to ensure that we continue to uphold the integrity of our merchandise that our customers have come to expect.
What age group was the shirt designed for?
Girls. Probably like
girls is not an age group.
Well, you know.
Someone didn't do her homework.
Girls is younger than women. So I would say probably, you know, elementary through like junior high school age.
You have no idea.
I have no idea, okay. But I'm thinking probably tween. It has a tween look to it.
I mean, I guess one could, if you were some tight-ass parent, you could conceivably make the argument that you shouldn't be giving that to kids who are young enough that they can't understand the idea of, you know, humor.
Right. They're not going to be wearing it ironically.
I mean, I get your thing about blah, 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 sexism, blah, 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 whatever. I'm not saying skirts have an easy time of it, Dawn, in this world. They don't. But on the other hand, I think, here's my thing. Like, it's a joke. And so, you know, jokes can't hurt you unless you let them. So everybody should just shut their pie holes.
Well, yes. But I think also I think adults can, you know, once you've pretty much formed your opinions of the world and figured stuff out, then, you know, you're on your own as far as stuff like this is concerned. When you're looking at school age kids and you're still trying to guide them to, you know, particularly young women trying to guide them to, like, I don't know, have a freaking brain in their head. And not think that being pretty is more important than being smart. That something like this is just, you know, it's a stupid idea.
Well,
it's just stupid.
I don't understand what that means. When you say it's just a stupid idea, that doesn't mean anything. What does that mean? I mean, that seems like such a broad, no pun intended, statement. That condemnation means nothing because it's so vast.
It's intellectually insulting. It's potentially, you know, it adds to a harmful zeitgeist
really?
In which women, you know, young women need to learn to be smart is more important than being pretty.
I guess if someone else's T-shirt really affects your, you know, thought process and your development, but that's a larger issue. Like if someone else
it's not a matter of looking at the shirt on someone else. It's a matter of
that the shirt exists.
Being a parent and saying that you think it's okay for your daughter to wear this. And for your daughter to believe that this is clever.
I think it's a question of being a parent and understanding that maybe your kid understands what a joke is. Yeah, I mean, kids are just way smarter than we give them credit for, and they're far more nuanced than we give them credit for. Kids understand what humor is. I'm not saying, and also I would say that the vast majority of people who look at that shirt would recognize it as being humor.
Yeah.
The only reason that shirt would bother you is if you somehow secretly believed that it wasn't humorous, or that it wasn't false, or that it had the ability to, like, change society as we know it. Look, I don't care. I'm not a girl. I don't do homework. I didn't do homework then, and it wasn't because I wasn't a girl. So
a lot of things are jokes that are still offensive. It's perpetuating a stereotype of prettiness as opposed to brains, and it's still offensive.
You know, those of you who have both, Dawn, might view it that way, but I think for the rest of us who had to choose, I mean, if I had to be pretty or smart, I got to. If I had to do it all over again, I'd completely pick pretty. As it is now, I've just got my vast planet-like brain. But I mean, look how far that's gotten me.
Okay.
Sitting here being yelled at by somebody who has a hole in the front of her sweater.
Yes, but I'm also today wearing a.
What is up with that?
I'm wearing a shirt under that. So it's not
but like it's like you've got an extra navel on the outside of your clothing.
I ripped a hole in the front of my sweater, and I haven't been able to figure out how to sew it up. So I'm wearing the sweater, but I'm also wearing a black tank top underneath of it. So you're not looking at my sad white belly.
Okay.
So, you know.
It is 12:49.
Plus, I'm in a studio, and the only person who can see me is you.
Okay.
I'm here for my brain, baby, not for my pretties.
Your pretties. It's 12:49.
So we should probably do some entertainment news, you thinking?
Excellent. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday.
Alyssa Milano, welcome to Sun this morning, according to People magazine. Milo Thomas Bugliari is the first child for both Milano and her husband of 2 years, talent agent David Bugliari. Milo clocked in at 7 pounds, 19 inches long. Milano announced her pregnancy in February, then tweeted that she was having a boy this March.
Also, he didn't clock in
length. No, he didn't. You can thank Lanford Beard at E! News.
Okay,
for
now
that.
You undercut my attempt to be one of the sisters because I was going to say, did a woman write this story? And then you'd be able to.
Oh,
no,
sorry.
Langford.
No, it was Lanford.
All right, okay.
Lanford Beard. Mel Gibson has at last settled the rancorous custody and financial battle with his ex-girlfriend and the mother of his child. After over a year of back and forth, Gibson agreed Wednesday to pay Oksana Grigorieva $750,000 over the next 5 years. That's chump change for Mel Gibson.
Really, that's not
Come
a great
on.
Deal. Honestly, that's just like the interest on whatever I expected he was going to have to pay.
Probably just dig that out of his couch. The money will go toward care and education for Lucia, the former couple's daughter, who will turn 2 in October. Under the deal, the actor and his ex will split custody equally as Grigorieva and Lucia continue to live in one of Gibson's homes in Los Angeles. Okay, well, there's that. None of that money's going for rent. When Lucia turns 18, Gibson will sell the house and put the proceeds in a trust for her. The settlement, which also put to rest a civil suit Grigorieva threatened against Gibson, prohibits both of them from speaking out against each other or their relationship publicly.
But the great thing is that eventually Mel Gibson will just get his way into a bottle of Bushmills and we'll get his side of it anyway. Like, yeah. While he's being tased by the cops.
In between him screaming about Jews.
Yeah.
United Airlines is investigating a complaint made by an actor who appeared on the TV show Barbershop after he claimed he was kicked off a flight because he was black. Michael Collier claims he was booted from his flight at Dulles International Airport in Virginia after he refused to allow a flight attendant to move his luggage from the overhead storage bin so a white passenger could stow her bag there instead.
Wow.
Collier claims the flight attendant gave him dirty looks when he denied her request, so he inquired about filing a complaint. That's when Collier said he was approached by security who removed him from the flight.
Okay, she didn't actually say that, though.
No.
The stewardess didn't actually say, sir, a white man needs this space.
Right. No, he just assumed that was
okay.
It. Then he, I'm sure, very politely and quietly asked where he could register a complaint at a later time.
I mean, it sounds like it was the case, not that it was being, not that that was her motivation, but are the facts of the case undisputed? In other words, did she in fact come by and ask him to move something, and was it because a passenger who was white had to put something there?
I have no idea, but
okay.
I will say, I do have a word coming up here that some people find offensive, but it's necessary for the story, trust me.
Is it niggardly?
Yes, that would be the word.
Okay.
Collier blogged about the incident, writing, the flight attendant and her friend got just what they wanted, the nigger off the plane.
Oh!
I'm sure they feel a great triumph in getting an uppity nigger in his place.
Wow. Okay.
He adds, at the
this
least...
This show's taken a strange turn.
At the least, I should be suing United Airlines for theft of services, public humiliation, and defamation of character. Sources connected to the incident said multiple passengers have been interviewed about the situation, and several people said Collier was loud with the flight attendant and had become an unruly passenger.
Well, here's the thing. Race-related, not race-related, gay, straight, black, white. I like it whenever I see somebody really getting angrily obstreperous with flight attendants. Because, I mean, honestly, because you feel like you can't. Here's the thing about being on a plane now is like, no matter what jackass you have, coming by and like, you know, and being uncooperative and unhelpful or telling you can't get up to use the bathroom. You feel like you are not allowed to say anything for fear that they'll tase you and stick you in Guantanamo as soon as the plane lands. I mean, I saw a guy that when I was flying back from Vegas, there was a guy who had to get up and use the toilet, and somebody, you know, and the flight attendant guy said, "I'm sorry, sir, repair to your seat." But he said, "You have to sit back down. We're getting ready to head into some whatever the seatbelt zone or whatever." And the guy said, well, I just got to use the bathroom. And the guy says, well, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to do that right now. And it's like, that's kind of a binary thing. It's like one either has to go whiz or one does not. Yeah. I mean, and it seems like, Anyway, and so you could tell that the guy wanted to raise sort of a fuss about it and just say, like, look, dick, I just got to go, like, you know, pee for 30 seconds and I'll be back in my seat.
And then he saw that the flight attendant already had one hand on the stun gun.
Yeah, or just, you know, like, you know, raising to press that button that says unruly passenger, which then triggers a bunch of guys to come out and just, you know, probe you and stick you in a hole, you know, in Azkaban once the plane lands.
So, I'm ever so slightly more interested now in the upcoming Dancing with the Stars because it's been announced that Chaz Bono's partner in the show is going to be Lacey Schwimmer, who is probably the only reason I have ever really actually ever watched Dancing with the Stars. She was a contestant on So You Think You Can Dance several seasons ago and is now one of the pro dancers who partners with the stars on Dancing with the Stars. And she's awesome and delightful and swell. She and her cousin Benji both competed the same season. Benji ended up winning. They're both Mormon and are like professional swing dancers. And then they were having to like mambo and you know, do all of these other things. And she's just awesome. And she's going to be Chaz Bono's partner on Dancing with the Stars. So anyway, apparently there has been, shockingly you'll find,
a ruckus.
There apparently has been something of a kerfuffle with some viewers not liking the idea that Chaz Bono is on Dancing with the Stars, what with him being a transgendered former lady and all.
And also looking like Kevin Meaney.
And also apparently still having a vagina.
Yeah.
But Lacey Schwimmer came out and said, I think it's absolutely ridiculous when people have anything negative to say about anybody other than themselves. It's not fair, it's not nice, and it's degrading. At the same time, Chaz and I are not going to be focusing on the haters because we know that they're going to be there. We're focusing on the positive, and we've definitely had so much more positive support than the negative, and that's what's important to us. Schwimmer says Chaz will shock viewers when they see him on the dance floor. There's a lot of people against him at this moment because they don't know too much about him and his whole process. I think through the show, you're going to see a different side of Chaz. I think people are going to get past, is he a boy or is he a girl? I think they're just going to stop questioning and accept him for him.
Well, let's just be fair. He doesn't really look like he's going to be light on his feet.
No.
I mean, in fact,
no,
I think...
there is that.
In point of fact, he probably is not light on his feet.
No.
I mean, strictly speaking. But he doesn't really look like he's going to be the picture of grace. Now, what do you mean... And I am saying he, but... What I was to understand the vagina was gone.
No,
had been whisked away.
No, he hasn't had the
penis fairy had.
No, he hasn't had that surgery yet.
So he's just had the first.
He's had the all of the hormones and the top surgery, but
okay.
hasn't had the all of the reassignment surgery.
Okay.
Yet. So anyway, but yeah, Schwimmer said as for the impact Chaz will have on the show, she said, and again I think this is obvious, especially great for like this adorable little like
tiny Mormon girl
saying, I think it's just showing that people need to be okay with this. We need to evolve. It's 2011. I personally feel that we need to get over it.
Seriously, the Mormons can get with that.
Yeah.
Then, I mean.
Time do we have?
We got like 90 seconds, give or take.
Police in Ohio got a tip that someone on Willie Nelson's son's tour bus was carrying drugs yesterday. And it was true.
Barrel meat
believe
fish.
Believe it or not. But it was not Willie Nelson's son. Turns out Willie's 22-year-old kid, Lucas Nelson, is also a musician. And yesterday his band was stopped in Ohio when local police got a tip that someone on the bus was in possession of weed. Centerville Police Department Officer Matt Dunn. I mean, honestly, what are the odds? A drug-sniffing dog was sent to the scene and tipped off police to a suspect who was a member of Lucas's band. Cops say the band member had a small amount of weed in his possession and was arrested for misdemeanor possession of marijuana. As for Lucas, he was completely clean. And after cops hauled away the band member, Lucas and his posse were sent on their way.
Okay.
Willie Nelson, on the other hand, wasn't so lucky when they found weed on his tour bus in Texas last year. Because, you know, he was arrested and that case is still
that is just that is just when they are getting toward the end of the month and a quota needs to be met. And they must have...
Wait a minute. Willie Nelson's kid is coming through town.
I would bet that they have a tracking device or some sort of a GPS that just tracks Willie and Snoop Dogg wherever they are in the country. And so then if somebody's like, quota, find me Willie. And they go, oh, my God, he's only a mile and a half from here. And they go, excellent, fantastic, man, let's get on it. And they go over there, and then the quota, they can meet the goal before, like, you know, it's like hitting the MDA telethon tote board, you know, but before midnight strikes. And with that, we... excellent, fantastic. We'll bring the curtain down on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. We'll see you next hour at rickemersonshow.com and again tomorrow at noon for another episode of Legion of News. Until then, have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you? Thank you for listening.